This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 140, Death Monkey Space Daddy. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the next Destination Star Trek, Patrick Stewart's new TV series, a NASA honor for William Shatner, and a decision that could have changed Star Trek history in 1966. Then in the feature, we're joined by Tristan Riddell and Suzanne Abbott to discuss the Voyager episode, Coda. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. It's great to have you back with me this week. It's Voyager week on the Ready Room. Time to talk about some Janeway, some Chakotay, of course, some Monkey from Resolutions. We can't talk about any episode of Voyager without getting into that now, can we?
Well, no, especially since we're going to have Tristan Riddell with us for the feature. It's a given.
Absolutely. It really is. So I have to ask you, Char, before we jump into the news here, we like to talk about sports ball on the network and how
sports ball.
Most of our hosts don't care anything about sports. Now, I personally am a diehard sports fan, especially college football, but I have fun joking about sports ball with everyone. I've been following your Twitter stream recently, though, and man, I think you are the ice hockey equivalent of me when it comes to college football. What's going on in the world of hockey, Char?
Oh, tell you what, me and Will Wheaton, yeah, there's times where we are yelling and screaming and hollering and swearing. And oh, that's usually day in and day out. But no, especially when hockey playoffs are in action, for sure. Unfortunately, Will Wheaton's team went on to advance in the playoffs, and my team did not, because I'm an Avalanche fan. And it was very exciting to have a team that was very much pretty much at the bottom of the barrel rise up to make the playoffs, win the Central Division, and almost advance in the playoffs with a first-year NHL coach, who is the man who got me into hockey, by the way. It's been exciting times.
Well, when I become a millionaire, I'm going to buy my own NHL franchise, and I'm going to call them the Breen.
And they're going to play in Fargo, right?
Right, the Fargo Breen.
Fargo Breen. It sounds great.
And they are going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm going to call it the Dominion Cup, though.
Dominion Cup. Yeah. Okay, fine.
All right, well, let's get into Star Trek stuff here and talk about news. And the first story we have up is the big announcement, which was just made last Friday, May 2nd, by Media 10. And this is about Destination Star Trek. Last year, it took place in Frankfurt. The year before that, it took place in London and was a huge success. And they have announced the next stop for Destination Star Trek. And Char, drum roll, where are they going to be landing?
London.
What a surprise.
They're going back.
Did you ever have any doubt that it was going to be London? Because I pretty much didn't.
No, not at all. Based on the feedback that I was reading on Twitter and elsewhere, people were actually quite upset at the idea of having the convention moved over to Germany, because they have
FedCon.
Yeah, they have FedCon. They've already got a big convention in Germany, and the Londoners were irate at this because it meant a lot more travel for them and therefore more expenses. And so it is no surprise that they're going back to London to keep those people happy.
Yeah, yeah. Now, of course, you can look at it from the flip side as well, that everyone on the European continent could say, well, for us, we have to go to London, so it's more travel time and it's more expense for us as well. But of the fan bases, I would say the UK and Germany are the two largest Star Trek countries outside of the United States. And so it did make sense to have it in Frankfurt, I think. If I'm just organizing a Star Trek convention and I want to move it around to a few different locations, I would probably think of Germany as well. But like you said, they have FedCon, and so then you've got a lot of competition, and you're not talking about a country like the US where it's not practical for someone in Boston to travel to Las Vegas, for example. And so, so you can have these big events in multiple locations.
Yeah, Europe is a little different in terms of travel. I think they are much more used to crossing country borders than we are.
Yeah, of course.
Whereas for us, I mean, even state borders sometimes is a big deal, depending on where you live.
Right. And I think that London will have a better turnout. I can't really think of anywhere else in Europe that you would take this event and have the kind of turnout, both from the fans as well as the guests, as the actors, as what you're going to get in London. Because we saw what happened in 2012, and we saw what a huge success that event was.
It's true. It really is an ideal location. I mean, a lot of people live in London, for one thing, but then travel to London is very accessible, I would say, for Europeans.
And it's a city that people really want to visit as well. So it's a good excuse.
That
like,
too.
I've always wanted to go to London.
Sure.
And I can go to Destination Star Trek at the same time.
There you go. Two for one deal. Yeah. It does make sense. So for those who are in that area and get to go see all of their favorite people in London, I'm happy for them.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, we have Colin here on the network who lives there in England. And so he'll be able to easily go, I am sure.
And oh, I'm sure he will.
Give us coverage
yeah.
of that. And we have lots of listeners there as well. And we'll be looking forward to hearing from them about the event. Also, now the event is going to take place October 3rd through the 5th. So you've got a little while now to prepare for it. Tickets are scheduled to go on sale June 6th. And it will be taking place in the Excel Center. And if you go over to the website, Destination Star Trek website, they have a video they've put together of the Frankfurt event, and I'm sure some things from the past as well, you know, if you kind of want to see what's going to be happening there. One last thing on this, the concept that MediaTen had for Destination Star Trek of moving it around, I would love to see this happen, although I know it won't. I would like to see them actually move it around to some other places in the world. Now, they're not going to go to the U.S. because that's Creation's territory. There's plenty of stuff going on there.
Yeah, we've already got plenty.
I would love to see... Well, I would love to see them do one in Tokyo, but that's not going to happen.
Of course.
Because it's very expensive, very difficult for people to travel here, and the fan base just doesn't support it. But somewhere like China could be interesting, where you put it in a place where there is a very large population. It's easier for people in the area to travel over, and it'd be interesting to see what kind of turnout they would get for something like that. But I don't see it as being, from a business standpoint, I think it would be a hard sell. It would be expensive to put on. Probably it would be difficult to get enough actors and writers and people to come to it as guest panelists as well. But who knows? I mean, you know, Star Trek is about the world being united. And so it would be interesting to be able to take Star Trek to other parts of the world.
It really would be. You don't hear very often about a convention coming, say, to Hong Kong or Shanghai.
Right.
I wonder if there is the market for that there. I mean, the only other place I can think of that really does a lot of conventions is Australia.
Yeah. But see, there, too, the travel, it's difficult and it's expensive. And, I mean, for me, I mean, Australia is only 30 minutes to an hour off, depending on the time zone, from where I am in Japan. But if I'm going to fly to Australia, I might as well fly to California. It's the same amount of time it would take me to get there. So, yeah.
Crazy thought, but wow.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm glad Destination Star Trek is continuing to thrive, though, and it's returning to London. And I'm glad that we're continuing, and MediaTen is continuing to help build the Star Trek fan base around the world. Here as we approach 50 years of Star Trek. All right. Well, what is next for us in Ushar?
I find find this incredibly interesting. Patrick Stewart is coming back to TV. And no, not just on Cosmos. He's actually going to be in another Seth MacFarlane show.
And it's a live-action comedy called Blunt Talk. And this is good news. According to Variety, Stars, the network Stars, has given a 2-season, 20-episode order of the show. That, for me, that's really important because, I mean, I would probably watch this one because Patrick Stewart is starring. But, you know, we get frustrated with, I don't watch new shows until they have a couple of seasons because we started watching Mind Games, the Christian Slater show on ABC. Mm-hmm. And we thought, you know, it was pretty good. We liked it. And then there were no new episodes week after week on Hulu. And so finally I went on the internet and I looked it up. And sure enough, after the last one we watched, ABC just canceled it effective immediately because it only had like 2 million viewers for that 5th episode. And that's what the networks do. And so I hate that. And so I'm glad that I'm glad Stars has done a 20 episode order here so that we know that we can watch this and not get cut off after 5 or 6 episodes.
They must have some pretty good faith that this show will be successful. And honestly, I think it does have a good chance. I mean, first off, you've got Patrick Stewart. It is a Seth MacFarlane comedy. What really gets me interested in this, though, besides Patrick Stewart, is what Patrick Stewart is going to be doing. This character he's playing, they call him a borderline alcoholic, mad genius Brit. And this sounds like a role that Stewart's really going to immerse himself in. It's going to be fantastic watching him be this character. I can't wait.
He's going to be good. I think that a lot of people who only know Patrick Stewart from Star Trek or from his stage shows don't realize how funny he is. And
agreed.
Describing this character here, my mind immediately goes back to when he hosted Saturday Night Live in the 90s, and he was the proprietor of the erotic cake shop. Do you remember that sketch?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes, I do. That was fantastic.
It was so good.
Yeah. It was. The guy really can do comedy. He just, I think, is more regarded as a serious Shakespearean actor.
And so, very justifiably so. But he's very funny, too. So I have a feeling this is going to be hilarious. I cannot wait to see it. Hopefully, because obviously I don't get Stars in Japan. Hopefully it's going to be on Hulu so I can see it, or at least available on the Stars website for streaming or something. It's set to debut in 2015. It's going to be written by Jonathan Ames of Bored to Death. And it just sounds like a romp.
This should be pretty fun.
So we will be waiting for that. We've got possibly a year to go. We don't know when in 2015 it will premiere. All right. Well, not to be outdone by a fellow captain in Star Trek, William Shatner has gotten into our news again this week. And usually it's Leonard Nimoy who's trying to get into our news segment when there's a William Shatner story. This time, Patrick Stewart led, William Shatner pops in. This is about another honor for William Shatner, as if he didn't have enough already, but definitely another very deserved honor, this time from NASA, who has awarded William Shatner the Distinguished Public Service Medal at his recent Hollywood Charity Horse event in Los Angeles.
Yeah, this sounds like a pretty prestigious thing. I mean, and who better of any kind of pop culture actor, if you will, to get an honor like this from NASA. I can't think of anybody better. This is definitely, I would say, probably as rare of a thing as an actor is going to get as maybe, say, a Lifetime Achievement Award, a Best Barrel Roll Award.
Well, that goes to LeVar Burton.
Yes, yeah. Then see, that one's taken, so Shatner cannot get that one. And so this is a very cool honor, and who better?
Yeah. Well, William Shatner was so important to the development of the space program because you need new people coming in. You have to get people interested in space, interested in engineering. And just like Nichelle Nichols was so important for getting women into the sciences, NASA really latched on to Star Trek and Captain Kirk and thus William Shatner back in the late 60s and in the early 70s. And it's continued. It's a relationship that has continued through all these years. Of course, everyone remembers the photo of the Orbiter Enterprise with the cast in front of that. And then even recently, William Shatner recording that final wake-up call for the shuttle mission, narrating the documentary that NASA did about the space shuttle program. There's, for me, if you ask me space, whose voice equals space, if you think about science and space for me and space exploration, it's William Shatner. It's just immediate. It's Captain Kirk, it's William Shatner. So it's certainly a natural thing that NASA would give him this honor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly his involvement started with Star Trek, but it certainly hasn't ended with that. And yeah, absolutely. He has definitely been a driving force in inspiring people to want to be involved in the sciences, astronomy, and you could even go so far as to say to the push to go into space.
This was awarded to him by Bob Jacobs, who is NASA's Deputy Associate Administrator of Communications. And I did want to share what Jacobs said about William Shatner at the event. And he said that this is the highest award bestowed by the agency to non-government personnel, given for outstanding generosity and dedication to inspiring new generations of explorers around the world and for unwavering support for NASA and its missions of discovery. And then David Weaver, who is also from the Office of Communications, who is the Associate Administrator, said, William Shatner has been so generous with his time and energy in encouraging students to study sciences and math, so you know exactly what we've been saying right here, and for inspiring generations of explorers, including many of the astronauts and engineers who are a part of NASA today. He's most deserving of this prestigious award. So I think we stole the words right out of Weaver's mouth right there. But it's good to hear
them. He said them a little more eloquently.
He did, more eloquently. And it's good to hear them directly from NASA. So congratulations to William Shatner on the honor. Very well deserved. And I hope that we will have new Star Trek in the future, new role models created by new Star Trek series so that future generations will have the same inspiration experience that our generation has had.
Absolutely. We got to continue this experience. We have to keep people involved. We have to keep science moving, keep people wanting more and better.
Most definitely. Now, the final story we have in news today, Shar, kind of relates to this because in their latest article for StarTrek.com, our friend John Tenuto and his wife, Maria Jose, wrote a piece about something that they uncovered as they were looking through UCLA's Gene Roddenberry Star Trek television series collection. John and Maria Jose have been given access to Gene Roddenberry's archives, to Nick Meyer's archives. They've done extensive research on the production of the original series on The Wrath of Khan. Anyone who listens to our network regularly has heard John on here many, many times with us talking about all of these topics and Khan and Ricardo Montalban and all sorts of things. And one thing that they found that was very interesting was a telegram that was sent by Gene Roddenberry, and it was dated March 6th, 1966. And he sent it to, you know, cast and crew of Star Trek. And it said, good news, official pickup today, our 5-year mission, 8:30 every Friday night. Best regards, Gene Roddenberry. And the question that John and Maria ask is, if Star Trek had premiered on a Friday night, would it have been a bad thing for Star Trek? And would it have possibly nipped Star Trek in the bud before it ever got off the ground? And therefore, what we just talked about with William Shatner and NASA and inspiring generations of scientists and explorers may have never happened because Star Trek may have been like a one season run and lost and forgotten.
it's definitely possible. And I'm almost surprised NBC didn't do that right off the bat, just because they'd sunk so much money into two pilots for this show, and they still were, they were always a little unsure about Star Trek, the entire run of the original series. Had they put Star Trek on Friday nights, 10 p.m., as they did in the third season, yeah, I don't think we would be sitting here talking about it. I really don't.
Yeah, probably not. For me, so Star Trek premiered, as fans know, on Thursday, September 8th, 1966, at 8:30 p.m., so one day earlier. Now, of course, Friday nights, it's a time when people, especially young people, go out. And you're not at home typically on a Friday night watching television back in those days. There are no recorders.
Right.
You gotta watch it live. You're not home. And 8:30 for younger children who were home, and we know this from talking to people like Doug Drexler, who had to basically beg his parents to let him watch Star Trek at 8:30 at night, that, these people, it's past their bedtime. So
exactly,
it was important to have it at a time when people could watch it. And for me over the years, and tell me if maybe it's just me, but I think this is pretty much a universal thing. Whenever a TV show gets moved to Friday night, you know it's getting close to cancellation. And when it gets moved to Saturday night, you know that that's the death of the show and it's not going to be around much longer.
Right. Those are graveyard slots for a reason. I think it doesn't matter quite as much in this day and age where we have DVRs and streaming video and all that, and people watch whatever they want whenever they want to watch it. But back then, this was a really big deal because there was no recording. If you missed it showing live at the time it was scheduled to air, that was it. You missed it.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to forget that in the 21st century, but that's the way things were then. And ratings were, I would say, a much bigger deal than they are now.
Yeah, and especially moving on through the years following this, ratings became extremely important. And then you get to the 80s and they really, really work on trying to more accurately measure ratings at all. And now today, like you said, it's easy to forget because I don't watch anything live. I watch things off of Hulu and Netflix.
Who does?
And I watch Blu-rays and DVDs, and I don't watch anything live unless it's sports. And even that, I usually can't watch it live because I live on the other side of the world, so I have to avoid news, and I watch the replay because I have access to that, through the online distribution methods now that ESPN and NFL do. So it's easy to forget that. But as John and Maria Jose say in the article, if the arguments about the third season switch from Thursdays to Fridays correlating to Trek's cancellation are valid, then it is possible that a Friday night first season would have further impaired the show's already concerning ratings. A Friday first season could very well have meant worse ratings, no second season, no syndication, no revival, and no Trek history as we know it. Not to mention no StarTrek.com and no articles like the one you're reading now. And I would add no network like Trek FM. And sure, we wouldn't be here talking about Star Trek right now either. And when
I might be watching playoff hockey.
You might be. Yes, I should add, by the way, you're really a trooper for foregoing playoff hockey right now to record the Ready Room tonight.
Well, like I said, my team lost. I don't care anymore.
So
maybe I'll watch some of the finals, but now that the Avalanche are out of it, it just doesn't mean as much.
Yeah, I know how you feel. I'm that way with football. But when I read what they write right here, I'm picturing us like we have to jump through the Guardian of Forever and go back to make sure that NBC puts Star Trek on Thursday night so that our future isn't changed.
That's right. And Edith Keeler must die.
All right. So it's a really good piece. They have images over there, and they write quite a bit more about it. So go over to StarTrek.com and check out this article by John and Maria Jose. All right, sure. That's all we have in news today. Before we jump into the feature, where we're going to be joined by your co-host from Do the Journey, Tristan Riddell, and new panelist, Suzanne Abbott, we'd like to tell everyone about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. Audible is the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere. They have over 150,000 titles waiting for you right now, and they add hundreds of new books every single week. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they keep up with all this, because they produce a lot of these themselves, actually, especially in the science fiction genre. But what we like to do every week is to recommend a book to you. They have lots of Star Trek books on there. The one I'd like to recommend today, though, is one I've recommended here on the show before. But because we talked about William Shatner and his award from NASA, I'd like to recommend Star Trek Memories. He's done two of these. He did one for the original series, which is Star Trek Memories, and then he did Star Trek Movie Memories, and they're both excellent. The reason I want to recommend it in relation to today's story is that he actually talks extensively in this book about the work that he did with NASA and the experience of, you know, meeting engineers and them meeting him, and how it was kind of surreal to him at the time that they would pull him in from this science fiction show to talk about science in the space program.
You mean real science?
Real science. Instead of yes.
Warp drives
not,
and
not
whatnot.
Black stars and slingshot time travel, which of course came later, but yes.
Right.
So it's really interesting, and of course this book is narrated by William Shatner as well. And so when you hear him talk about it, it's less like him reading his own book, and it's more like him just telling you the story of his life. So I highly recommend this book. If you have it in print, go get the audio version if you've never heard it, because it you get so much more out of it. And as a Trek FM listener, we do have a special offer for you. You can get Star Trek Memories, or any book you want, absolutely free, just for trying Audible. And the way you do that is to go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. If at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose. You get to keep that audiobook. That's yours, but I know you're going to love Audible. If you're listening to this podcast and you love podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks. And if you're getting them from another source right now, Audible is a great place to get them, because they have great prices, great selection, and also great applications on your smartphone or tablet to help you listen to the books wherever you are. So go check it out again, audibletrial.com/trekfm. Your support of Audible helps us keep the Ready Room coming to you every week, and we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. Jerry Taylor wrote the book on Janeway, literally, two of them in fact, so it was no surprise that a third season story about Janeway's death came from her pen. Coda pulls together a number of familiar Star Trek themes to explore issues of death, how it affects both the survivors and the deceased, and we'll get to that in a bit, and even throws in a dying swan for good measure. And today we're going to talk about this episode with the help of a first-time panelist and die-hard Janeway Chakotay fan, Suzanne Abbott. Welcome to the Ready Room, Suzanne.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And also joining us, thanks to Char's successful trap, the ISS himself, international sex symbol and co-host of To the Journey.
To the
Tristan
Journey!
Riddell.
To the
Tristan,
Journey!
Thanks for finally coming back to the Ready Room.
You'll never take me alive!
All right, guys, so we're back to Voyager Week, and we've decided to talk about Coda, and Suzanne, I believe you're the first person who suggested Coda, aren't you?
Yes, I do believe. It was between that and Hunters, both Janeway Chakotay episodes, so I couldn't go wrong there.
All right, I sensed a theme there.
Me too.
Especially from talking to you before
but I was
inviting
trying to
you onto
it.
The show here.
I know you were.
You're trying to hide it. Now, doesn't your Twitter profile say something like JC Shipper or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of a dead giveaway.
I'm not very good at hiding things.
This is why you are not a Section 31 agent.
No. That is correct.
All right. So before we get into the discussion, a quick rundown of the episode for those of you who haven't seen it in a while, or maybe haven't seen it before. This is a story in which, for some reason, which we'll talk about in a moment, Janeway and Chakotay together, alone, are going to a stormy planet in a shuttlecraft. And they crash, and Janeway dies, and then they go to the planet in a shuttlecraft, and then Janeway dies, and then they go to the planet, and it just loops around and around and around for a while. And then they get back to Voyager, and Janeway's the only one who has any memory of the actual attack by Vidians that takes place and results in her death. And then the rest of the episode is her dealing with death and an appearance by her father, trying to convince her to let go and move on to the next phase and the next plane of existence, and the crew dealing with the death of their captain. Of course, spoiler alert, Janeway doesn't die. Third season episode, Janeway lives. Sorry to spoil that for you. But she
really?
Sorry, not
is
sorry.
Okay in the end. Oh. So let's go on and talk about this a little bit. And, you know, this is what we call, of course, here in the Trek of Film world, a Jerry Taylor joint. The story was written by Jerry Taylor. And, you know, I mean, she created the character of Janeway and she created the show itself. So there's really no one better to bring us a Janeway story than her. And Tristan and Char, I know you guys are big fans of Jerry's book Mosaic in particular.
That, oh, yeah.
You know, tells the story of Voyager going in. What do you guys see in this, not just this episode, but generally speaking about Jerry Taylor and the character of Janeway? What does she bring to the character that other writers can't or don't because of her connection to Janeway?
I think the biggest thing, and Jerry Taylor does this well with just about everything that she writes, is she humanizes this character. She kind of gives you the person underneath the captain's exterior.
She humanizes by complication. I feel like it would be very easy to have a one-dimensional leader where she makes a decision and everybody follows it because she's the captain, but this gives a little bit more depth to the character, shows her humanity and also her fear of moving on, and about her overall connection to the crew, that even in death, she would not leave her crew.
She also allows her to be a woman and not just a captain, a woman that can show emotions other than anger, which is what we mostly see from her.
Right, or nothing at all, as can be the case. Yeah, it's true. Jerry Taylor does try to show off the softer side of Janeway, while at the same time showing that she's also that strong person who's capable of being the captain.
Mm-hmm. Showing a woman can truly be everything.
Imagine that. She's a complete human being. Weird.
That's not allowed.
I know, right? Oh, my.
Would you guys see Janeway written by Jerry Taylor? Do you feel like the character's more... And I hear what you're saying right now on the different sides, and so maybe you've already answered this question, but the character's more cohesive or more stable than other times? Because my criticism of Janeway throughout the series is that I feel like she's not a stable character in the writing, that the writers do with her what they want to do for a particular story instead of you saying, this is who Janeway is, because with Picard or with Sisko or with Archer or with Kirk, we know who that character is, and they don't deviate for the story. The story will deviate for them. But with Janeway, I feel like she's sort of all over the place from time to time, and I think it's sort of a disservice because some of the concern people would have, going back to the 90s and the idea of making a woman the captain of a starship like this, people tend to say, and I'm not saying this is the case, I'm saying this is a general public opinion, of like, a man is more stable in a position of leadership like the captain's chair than a woman would be because women are too emotional. That's what people
typically say,
right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I can't believe you said that.
Again, I'm not saying that myself. I'm saying this is like general public view.
You made them cry, Chris.
things that people would say. And but where I'm going with this is that I feel like at times with the writing, because different writers would do different things with the character, sometimes maybe they kind of reinforce that view a little bit. Whereas, do you think Jerry Taylor does a better job of making sure that she can show those different sides but still be a more cohesive character?
Well, there's a clear difference between Janeway before Jerry Taylor leaves and when after Jerry Taylor leaves.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's your marker right there. Is that you said earlier that Jerry Taylor wrote the book on Janeway. Literally, she wrote the book on Janeway and she reinforced that ideal and that history and even made Mosaic canon because she could. She was the executive producer and the showrunner, and she wrote a lot of heavy Janeway episodes, just like Ronald D. Moore wrote a lot of Klingon heavy episodes. Mm-hmm. He helped shape the Klingon race just the way that Jerry Taylor shaped Janeway. And once she left, they were like, okay, great. Now we can do whatever we want with the character.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, why weren't the writers required to read that book? They should have been.
And you know that they did.
Like, here's your homework. Go do it.
Yeah, I feel like the writers definitely did whatever they wanted with Janeway. And as you said before, Chris, I really think that did do Janeway a disservice because she was written inconsistently. It's just whatever the writers wanted her to do in that particular time. So if she wants to be angry Janeway, she's going to be angry Janeway. If she's going to be sensible and rational Janeway, she's going to be that Janeway. And no, guys, none of the other characters are really like this, and I feel like they really screwed that part of things up. However, Jerry Taylor is kind of a two-edged sword. For as much service as she does to Janeway, she also almost does a disservice, and I feel almost like she's, I almost want to say, like, overcompensating for some of those earlier inconsistencies, trying to show off her softer, more feminine side or what have you, but going too far. Think about Persistence of Vision, where Janeway is exceptionally testy and moody, has no patience for anything, and she gets ordered to go to the holodeck and take some time off. It's like, oh, she's got so much pressure on her. And she's just stressing herself out. Yeah. She just got to take a break. You know, Chakotay can handle this for 3 seconds. Then, of course, he can't, but that's beside the point. But, like, I feel like she almost goes a little too far and messes things up just as much as everybody else, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
But then she learned to rein it back in a little more.
Yeah, right. And then she left.
After Persistence Division, it was better.
Yeah, season 3, I feel, was a very Jerry Taylor season. Like, I feel like it was very much her in charge, her story ideas, her running the show. And then that shift from season 3 to season 4, like you said, Tristan, very, very different. And especially with the characterization of Janeway.
Well, those are really excellent views on Janeway. And I'm glad to hear you guys talk about that as well as Voyager fans, because as many people know, Voyager's, I love Voyager, I love all of Star Trek, but Voyager is not my favorite series of all the series. And so sometimes, you know, I feel like if I talk about these things, people kind of maybe dismiss them as, oh, you're the guy that doesn't really like Voyager all that much. But I think it's a valid criticism of the character and something to look, if you're going to examine the writing of the character.
You got to be honest.
Then I think it's valid. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Char and I, with doing To the Journey, we're honest about Voyager's faults as much as their successes. Do I feel that Voyager's successes are not, you know, focused on enough in the Star Trek culture? Yes, I do think that they're not focused enough. I feel like we focus very harshly on its failings, because Voyager has failings. And Voyager's, I mean, I love Voyager, but it's not my favorite either. But I will talk about it with great love, but also great criticism when it's needed.
Honesty is the best policy, is it not? Yeah.
When it comes to the fandom, yes.
Yes. Well, let's talk about another topic here as we get more into the episode itself. Jerry Taylor said that Coda, it was the result of a number of ideas that she had been kicking around, none of which was working on its own. And so she pulled them together into this story. And when I watch this story, I definitely see a number of very distinct ideas that have been pushed together into one story. And overall, the episode still works okay, but it doesn't feel as cohesive as an average Star Trek episode does. Like, you can really tell that there are a number of ideas for episodes in here. And even when you deal with the death issues, which we'll talk about more as we go along, there are different issues related to death here as well that could be explored individually. And I feel a little bit like they compete with each other in this episode. But what do you guys think about all the different, the mishmash of ideas in this episode? And does it work for you to make a cohesive whole?
I'd say it works for me just because if you take an episode like, okay, the beginning of the episode's a lot like Groundhog's Day. You know, it's where it starts over, dies a different way, but still come back to the beginning. Every single show, it feels like every single show has a Groundhog's Day version. It's like, okay, when you have a run for that long, you got to do a Groundhog's Day episode. And right. We even saw one with Cause and Effect in TNG.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this whole episode was not Groundhog's Day, because I always find those episodes boring after the first 15 minutes. And thankfully, with this one, we got an introduction of that. We're like, oh, this is cool, but we get to move on. It's not just this starting over and over and over and over again. And so, I don't know. It was nice for me because I didn't get bored.
I think it is a little disjointed, though. I do see where several ideas converge to make this one story, and it doesn't completely fluently work. Like, I feel like it's just this big salad bowl of ideas. Jerry Taylor mixed them around a little bit, but they're all still
kind of
on
their
own.
But she didn't pour the dressing on top?
She might have not put enough dressing on it, or something was missing. It does not feel like a very solid, fluent episode.
The croutons were missing.
Croutons!
Oh, is that what it was?
That's what it was. Janeway forgot to bring the croutons.
Exactly. It could easily have been split into two separate episodes. It's just, you're watching, she keeps dying, and then all of a sudden, oh, yes, you're having an out-of-body experience. I'm like, well, where did that come from?
Did it bother anybody else when Janeway actually says, I know you can't see me or hear me, and then she keeps talking to the person who can't see her or hear her?
Yes.
Why is she doing that?
I would have done the same thing.
That.
I would have been screaming at Kes and Tuvok and trying to metaphorically smack them across their pointy ears.
I wish she would have been a little smarter about it. Okay, obviously Chakotay cannot see her, so I kind of like what she did with Kes, where she's determined. I'm going to make you sense my presence no matter what you do. So that would have been fine, but when she's actually just talking, Chakotay, I'm here.
Why didn't she touch him? Why?
Just stop.
That would have made a very uninteresting episode, though, because think about it this way. I know you can't hear me or see me, so I'm going to stay quiet for the rest of the episode.
No, but maybe physically she could be like, yeah, Chakotay, hello, you know. Like, there's that one little thing where she is, like, her hand goes through his shoulder or something like that. Maybe we could have been a little more creative about it.
I think when I was watching too, I was thinking, so in Vanishing Point, what Hoshi does is she actually finds a way to make noise through the pipes in Archer's quarters to send a message. You know, she like finds a way to do that. But at the same time, I think that what she did of, you know, having Kes pass through her is actually to the point of what Jerry Taylor was going for here, which is that when people say that they feel the presence of deceased loved ones or they feel ghosts, you always say like you feel a cold chill or you feel a presence. Mm-hmm. And so in order to get to the point of what Jerry is trying to talk about here, which becomes more clear as you get towards the end of the episode, I think she had to do that because it does drive home the idea of whether people in the, what's the terminology that we would use, the planes of the living and the dead or whatever, different planes of existence can interact with one another. And if there's any sort of of sensation or any way that you can actually feel the presence from one side or the other. So while it seems like a ridiculous thing for her to be trying to do, especially in the 24th century, where you would think with all her Starfleet training and experience, she would come up with a better idea than that.
Right.
I do think for the story, it makes sense that that's what she would do.
You make a good point, but I'm still not on board.
Well, speaking of the 24th century and Starfleet experience and technology, Chakotay performing CPR.
You think they'd have something
I mean,
more
I didn't mind it. Because there was a little lip lock action going on. Like, kiss the life back into her, man. Do it. Well, but really?
You know,
this one cracked me up because I think it's only like the fourth. There are only like four times in Star Trek where we see anyone doing CPR because, you know, the medical technology is more advanced. And he's doing it. It's not working. And then finally he pulls out a hypo spray and then she's, oh, where am I? And I'm thinking, well, that's why you never see anyone doing CPR.
Exactly.
Because all you need is a hypo spray.
You know, yeah, I think the lip lock factor is exactly why this whole thing came to be. Jerry Taylor wanted to throw the relationshippers a little bit of a bone. This was a very easy way to do it. And let's face it, this was the 90s. What was popular during the 90s? Baywatch.
Kissing? Oh, okay. I was just going to go with kissing. I was going to go with the simple
kissing
answer right there.
Kissing is popular in every century.
Kissing still popular?
I think you... Okay, this is like the third or fourth time you've brought up Baywatch in regards to Voyager. I think
but no, seriously.
Baywatch is more popular in your mind than it really was.
Maybe it was the fact that they showed Voyager really late at night because we didn't actually have UPN. We had some random channel pick it up, and they also had Baywatch on very late at night, so maybe the two are back-to-back in my mind. But no, seriously, I mean, how can Breathe, Damn It, Breathe not be reminiscent of Baywatch?
It's, okay, no, it's not, all right? It's not reminiscent to Baywatch, because what's reminiscent to Baywatch is Pamela Anderson jumping around in a bikini. No, this
well,
is
maybe to
okay,
you.
This is reminiscent of The Abyss. Have you seen that James Cameron movie?
No.
It's a fantastic, underrated film by James Cameron, and there's this one scene with Ed Harris, and I can't remember her name, but it's his ex-wife, and she's drowned to death, and he pulls her out, and it's in a crazy emotional scene where he's just like screaming at her lifeless body, smacking her around, saying, breathe, breathe, fight, fight, and it's an amazing, gut-wrenching scene. And so I think that's why they put it in there. Not necessarily for the lip lock, not for Pamela Anderson in a bikini. It was so that we could see this raw emotion between Chakotay and Janeway. So it's so that we could get that raw emotion and that connection without having them have a romantic moment.
Okay, mm-hmm. You might be
Which
right.
Which comes later.
I mean, you bring out the good part of this scene and probably why they actually did go through with it. But I'm sorry, the whole breathe, damn it, breathe thing did ruin it for me a little bit. What does get me, though, is when he's really losing her and he's like, start breathing, come on! And of course she's not going to at this point. And that says a lot about Chakotay. The big thing...
I just love it whenever Chakotay calls her Catherine. I think that's fantastic.
The Catherine count in this episode is through the roof. This is the episode where we learn that, I think, Chakotay still loves Catherine. After Resolutions, he's still in love with her. He still cares about her very much. And I would even say Kathy's a little bit on board, too, at this point. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, because how much of it is going on in her head?
Okay, well, that opens up a whole new can of worms because, yes, so much of this is in her head that... Does anybody else find that a little weird? She's envisioning her own memorial service and what people are saying about her.
Yes.
Now, granted, the alien is kind of helping her along. But, well, this says a little bit about her ego, does it not?
It
a
reminds
whole lot
me of the,
about it.
The Frasier episode we watched the other night where Frasier decides he needs to write his own obituary so that that will help him to achieve things in the remaining part of his life. And he has, like, Frasier Crane came late to the world of athletics. He won the Kentucky Derby. You know, he won the Boston Marathon or whatever it was. It's kind of like that. It's how you see yourself and how others will remember you. So maybe here, this is how Janeway feels. Like, this is how everyone views her in her own mind.
Well,
So why does she want B'Elanna talking at her memorial service?
Well, she has a secret crush on B'Elanna, Suzanne. Don't you read your fanfic?
I do, but I stick with the Janeway Chakotay fanfiction.
Okay.
I think it was because if you look at... Okay, Harry is an obvious choice because he's a brand new green ensign, and yeah. she obviously has some instincts to kind of guide him and mentor him because mm-hmm. she's the captain. He's the youngest senior crew member. And so, yeah, she wants to take care of him. And then you look at B'Elanna. You know, B'Elanna had a lot of issues. She was thrown into this situation against her will. She had a lot of anger issues. She has a lot of cultural issues. But Janeway listened to Chakotay when she put her in a position of power, and B'Elanna did not let her down. And so she's always kind of had an investment, an emotional investment in B'Elanna because of her troubled past, but has helped her become a productive member of Federation society on the ship.
I thought B'Elanna was a great choice. Yeah. And Harry would have been too had Garrett Wong not phoned in that performance, but that's just my opinion.
Mm.
He might be listening, Char. My goodness.
I love you, Garrett. Please come on to the journey.
I also think that the Tuvok scene was good because they have the bond where they have that connection, and I think that what she was seeing there from Tuvok was spot on about how he actually feels about her, but he would never say it publicly.
Right.
Really, although he kind of opens up to her from time to time a little bit.
Yeah, I thought his speech would have gotten the tears instead of Harry's.
Right? Yeah. I felt like Harry's story was okay, and Mulgrew is just like tears are streaking down her face. She's really emotional about it, and I'm not feeling that way at all about this story. Not really.
Well, I think, though, that for Janeway, Harry is sort of like a son. So it's sort of like a parent-child situation there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe she was bawling a little bit more than maybe she should have been from that. But I get it. I mean, I can understand the connection from both directions there of how Harry views her and also how she feels about him, especially because she feels responsible for getting them lost in the first place in the Delta Quadrant. Mm-hmm. And it was Harry's first trip, you know, out there.
It's true. And he has serious mommy issues with
her. She wants to
her.
Take care of him.
Yeah.
I had my excess of Tuvok tears when he gently laid his hand on her shoulder and twisted. That was enough for me.
Oh,
I was an emotional wreck after that.
That was a hard moment to deal with.
That was very emotional.
Now, one thing we have to talk about while we're talking about these emotional connections here, and you're talking about the scene down there where Chakotay does the CPR. First of all, getting that raw emotion out of Chakotay there, I think, was pretty easy in the script because Robert Beltran got the script and said, hey, look, I have something to do besides standing around on the bridge and telling people to, you know, activate the view screen or something. So he really poured himself into it. Mm-hmm. But also an important thing to remember here is that Death is a monkey. You know, on Kirsten Beyer's recent novel Protectors, you've got this kind of energy beam coming between Janeway and Chakotay, preventing them from being together. That's the monkey from Resolutions taking a new form.
Stupid monkey.
Same thing here. The monkey from Resolutions, even when he's not present, he will always find a way to keep Kathy and Coco apart. In this case, he is the monkey of Death. He is Death Monkey.
So he's like a spider monkey because he's trying to draw her into the Matrix. So.
Right.
Now another monkey that I have to hate.
I say, you know, what I say is the monkey is more of a companion that joins us for the journey. Because reminding us that this time will never come again.
Well, I don't know about you, but I plan to live with the monkey forever.
I want to throw him out an airlock. I hate the monkey.
But it did lead to that whole scene with Janeway in a towel. You know what I want Janeway and Chakotay to do?
What do you want them to do, Char?
You know what? Okay, since they are in the Delta Quadrant again in the novels, spoiler alert, they ought to go back to New Earth, retire there, and then find the monkey.
That'd be one old
and
monkey.
And eat it.
Hey, who's to say that?
Eat
the monkey?
Gosh.
Oh, come on now. I'm sure the replicator's still there.
No, I thought you said eat it. What did you say?
No, and no. What? Where did you guys get this? What the hell? What came out of my mouth? No.
I don't know.
No, meet the monkey. Find him again.
Oh, meet the... It's the online audio. I couldn't hear the M. And I thought you said eat the monkey. And then...
No.
Because I was picturing a sitcom, you know, like the three of them shacked up together in the house that they built there.
It's Suzanne's fault. Maybe she said eat the monkey.
I did.
Oh, that's what I heard. Okay. Wow. Well, maybe they need to take Neelix along with them as well, so he can come up with some recipes.
Leola root monkey.
All right.
Okay, we better move away from this topic. It's getting
We better
dark.
Move away from the monkey. what did you guys think about the what I call the temporal recycling in here? Because now, Tristan, you mentioned Groundhog Day, which was a great analogy there. Staying within Star Trek, this reminded me a lot of Cause and Effect, but not done with the same impact as Cause and Effect.
Agreed.
Which makes sense in this episode, because Cause and Effect really was like the ending of Cause and Effect was when they finally figure out how to get out of the time loop. And of course, that's not the point of this episode, so you wouldn't want them to take so long to figure it out. Although I feel kind of like when they go back to the shuttle, and then they go back to the shuttle, and then very quickly they tell each other, oh yeah, we've been here before. We've talked about Harry and his clarinet solo, and we've done all this before. It felt like the resolution was just so quick that it was almost like saying that, hey guys, this is Star Trek. This kind of stuff happens. It's happened before. It happened on The Next Generation. Our characters know about this stuff. We're just going to push this out of the way really quickly here and move on. And so it felt kind of rushed to me here. And then we also, you know, pull in elements of the next phase. There are elements, we don't pull in elements of Vanishing Point because that actually comes later on. So I would say Vanishing Point maybe borrows elements from this story as well as the next phase. So these are, they're just things that happen often in Star Trek where the crew, they find themselves caught in time loops and they have these little pesky phasing issues where we're kind of out of sync with each other. Did you feel like this was sort of a grab bag of Star Trek tropes? Or
I liked it. I mean, I kind of like that idea that you brought up about how, like, oh, this happened in cause and effect, and we've all seen this before. Because I can just totally see Janeway and Chakotay going, oh, friggin' time loop. Yeah. Not again? Oh. You know, because there's so many times. I mean, they all have to read these reports. You know, they're out in the, you know, going where no one has gone before. And, I mean, there's so many times when, okay, there's like, Char, I know that you don't watch a lot of Firefly, but there's this episode where they find out that they have a psychic on board, and one guy goes, really? We're going to believe in psychics now? Like, that sounds a little bit like science fiction. And then his wife goes, we live in a spaceship, dear. He's like, yeah, so? You have to realize that these people live in the 24th century, and crazy stuff happens all the time. And so, and like I said before, I like Cause and Effect, but there's so many times when I watch it, I'm like, okay, move on. We get it. Let's keep going. And so I appreciated that they cut it short.
So it goes along with that weird as part of the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It seems like it would have been more fun to live in the 23rd century or at least in the Next Generation portion of the 24th century where everything was still new, you know? The weird stuff was still a little bit newer to you. I mean, see, like, Kirk ends up on a planet and makes out with Lady Gaga. That was never expected. But on Voyager, if Chakotay found himself on a planet making out with Lady Gaga, he would go, again, Lady Gaga, how many planets are you on?
Yeah, like, okay, that's Monday.
Yeah.
Right.
Like Suzanne said, weird is part of the job.
Yeah.
That's right.
A temporal anomaly, that's Tuesday. Just another day in the office.
I guess the elements from the next phase, this type of stuff, where we're dealing with being out of phase with one another, we talked about that up front anyway. And Char, you know, you said you would have liked to have seen maybe something a little bit more creative done there in the solutions to this. You guys like to do rewrites on To the Journey.
Yes, we do.
What would you have done differently, Char, with these?
Oh, you can't put me on the spot like this. We've got to save that for the To the Journey podcast. This is actually an episode rewrite candidate, so.
Okay, well, you can give us your, you know, your B grade rewrite right here. B-side.
This takes a lot of thought here. It requires the storyboard and some Chinese takeout, just like the writers themselves did every week.
You guys don't understand how much work Char and I put into it. I mean, we quit our jobs for a week whenever we do a rewrite just so we can do an Aaron Sorkin walking through the hallway, going back and forth, pitching ideas. But what I would do with this one is I would add a little bit more... I would have more emphasis on the father figure. I know he was there, but I would maybe have him be a little bit more menacing earlier on. Add a little bit more cat and mouse dimension to it instead of just, oh, you're evil now, but it doesn't matter because I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
I never really bought that was really her father in the first place. Like, I just had that instinct that, yeah, this is definitely an alien, because I expected more warmth from him. I don't know if this is just something that kind of came from my brain or Mosaic or what, but I think there would have been a lot more affection. He would have been a lot more happy to see his daughter. And so I wasn't buying the whole daddy thing anyway.
Yeah, he could have faked it better.
Totally. And I don't think it's the actor's fault. I think we've seen, this guy, he's been in a lot of stuff. He's been in Hollywood for a long time. This is definitely not his best performance. But it might also have something to do with the fact that this is an incredibly underdeveloped character, so there's that, too.
He was wearing the wrong comm badge, too.
Okay, well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have a theory on this. At least, I'm sure, in reality, I'm sure that it was a costume mistake. However, the alien was projecting himself as being her father, and the alien would not necessarily know that Starfleet had changed its comm badge design, so he's just basing it on what Janeway's wearing already. And to me, that's sort of a tip-off that this isn't her father and this is not correct in the first place. She's not actually remembering her father, because she would have remembered her father with the correct comm badge on. Now, like I said, I'm sure it was a costume department mistake, but... you can justify it within the story, I think.
I don't know.
With that logic, why would he have an admiral outfit? Why would the alien know what an admiral outfit looks like?
Exactly. If he's her memories, she would remember the correct comm badge.
You would think, but, she's a little bit delirious. She did lock lips with Chakotay. She hasn't fully recovered from that yet.
Yeah.
Deprived oxygen from the brain. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I would ever recover from that.
Okay, so it's a little bit of a stretch there to justify it that way, but that did occur to me, though, because I have, heard people talk about this mistake.
Nice try.
All right. Did I get any points for that, Char?
One.
All right. It's a good thing the points don't
plus
matter.
Plus one. That's right. Yeah, it's all made up. Points don't matter.
For me, the whole episode, I never... Even going back to the doctor, when the whole scene with the doctor in sickbay, when he first tells her that she's contracted the phage, even at that point, I never bought into the idea that that was even the doctor. Immediately, I'm thinking, she's unconscious in the cave, or the Vidians have her. At least the Vidian part, although the Vidians acted weird too. They were almost like Ferengi with phasers or something. Like the Last Outpost Ferengi with phasers.
They needed laser whips.
And Janeway acted weird with the Vidians because Chakotay was shot. Why would you turn your back on them and go?
Exactly. Nobody does that if they want to preserve their life.
Only happens in TV and movies where a massive fight's going on. You're absolutely surrounded. The bad guys are coming. And then somebody goes down and you go, oh my gosh, look, you fell to the ground. I'm going to turn my back to you now.
Yeah, I'm going to run to you and make sure that you're going to be okay. And meanwhile, I'm going to get shot too. Gee.
Bam. Hit to the head.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they sold the whole idea very well that Janeway had contracted the phage. And that was before the doctor says, I'm going to euthanize you, because the doctor's never going to do that, right? That's just not, it's not something
unless
that...
Unless he's becoming Dr. Kevorkian.
Well, he is programmed with all the doctors in history, Suzanne, so...
Well, there might be some Kevorkian in there. I figured it was just yet another way to have Janeway either suffocate or choke to death. because they have to have Kate Mulgrew just every single time in this episode she dies and just kind of has that awful choking sound, which made me grateful when that finally stopped, when we were no longer in the time loop, that, okay, I'm glad we don't have to hear that again.
Like, oh, thank God, she's dead.
Yeah. Off it up. Spit it out
this time. Cool, okay.
They should make that. In iTunes, they have the ringtones, and they have a huge collection of Star Wars ringtones. They don't have Star Trek yet, but when they do, I think Janeway choking should be one of the tones that you can download for 99 cents.
Who's going to pay for that?
I'll make it for you guys if you really want.
I might pay for that and assign it to someone that I really don't want to talk to, so I know it's them.
Okay, now that's an idea. I like that. That's a good idea. If work calls, I hear Janeway choking. Oh! Ah, shoot, they want me to come in.
And that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tristan, would you make that?
Oh, yeah. I make ringtones on per request.
All right. Thank you.
Now we're gonna get messages asking us if it's gonna be available for download on the website.
We ought to charge 99 cents ourselves.
Yeah, because Paramount won't care about that at
all.
That's right. Yeah. we'll just have to have Char do her imitation of Janeway choking and make that the ringtone.
Oh,
there
you go. There you go.
Well, Char just did get done doing her best Kate Mulgrew impression yet.
Okay.
On to the journey.
So he says. So look for that on Thursday, guys.
So, like I said, I didn't buy into the whole thing in the first place. And so when we get to her dad, of course, I know, like, this isn't her dad coming out through here. And it becomes kind of clear that the whatever this is trying to convince her to let go and come over to the other side, the other plane of existence. And so there must be some kind of ulterior motive here. It also reminded me a little bit of Time Zero, where you have the Davidians, I believe is their name, right? Sounds like a denomination, is it?
Yes, so, right?
Where, you know, they're preying on humans who are near death for their own nourishment. And then here we have this alien who's either an individual or a race. It's not completely clear. Who is preying on probably not just humans, but probably all sorts of humanoids at the moment of their death for its own nourishment. And also apparently lives inside the anti-time eruption from All Good Things.
You noticed that too, huh?
Yeah.
It's in the Devron system.
That's right. This guy lives in the Devron system.
So they're not far from home. If they just looked at a map, maybe they could get home because they're in the Devron system.
But they don't have astrometrics yet, so they can't.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to see this alien again because just, I know we don't have to see every single time we tease something, we're like, you'll see me again. Just you wait and see. You know, like, I know every single time we hear an alien say that, it doesn't mean that we have to have some follow-up, but I would have liked to have seen some actual follow-up and see him in a different form later on. And, you know, because he can transcend the whole space-time thing. Like, there's a reason we don't see any Kazon again, because they left that part of space. But with this guy, you know, he feels like he exists outside of space-time, so it would have been cool to have him revived.
Like, perhaps when Neelix died, before he was brought back by 7th Nanoprobes.
Oh, yes. Yes, a situation like that, yeah.
Hmm. That would have been okay, but I'm actually quite all right by not seeing him again.
Well, that's your opinion.
I know.
So
deal with it.
Speaking of the anti-time eruption, though, they did reuse an effect. But I think that it also worked for the story, again, because one of the ideas that Jerry Taylor was going for here is what happens at the moment of death. And we always hear the stories about people seeing the bright light and the tunnel that takes you through. And that effect worked well for that. And it did set up that part of the story. It makes you ask some questions about what happens, you know, at that moment of death. I actually had someone I knew that was one of my mother's. My mother was married a number of times, and so it was one of my stepfather's growing up. But this man, he claimed to have died, claimed that he spoke to the devil, and that the devil told him that he could come back if he would be nice to people. And so he came back. Of course, he wasn't nice to people after that, so I think he kind of, he didn't uphold his end of the bargain there. But you hear these stories, and that's what it reminded me of here, and the question of whether this alien was supposed to represent the devil, because he's trying to pull you in for his own nourishment. If he's the Grim Reaper, you know, what are we going for here? So I think Jeri Taylor did a good job of setting up a question for you to think about here. But as I mentioned earlier, there are so many ideas in here that none of them really get fully addressed. Like, we get kind of halfway through addressing some of them, because the other question here is, what happens on the other side? What happens to the people who survive and have to deal with the fact that someone close to them has passed away? And that's what we see with the rest of the crew. So we've got that going on over here. We've got Janeway trying to decide whether she should let go and pass on, or whether she should fight death and go back to her life as it was. And is that even possible? Which is why I brought up the whole thing about my stepfather there, you know, someone who claims to have done that, you know, is that even possible?
Mm-hmm.
So, but when he talks about the fact that he's this alien and that he feeds off the nourishment, then you put sort of a science, or at least a science fiction element into it. So you've got questions of spirituality and religion, and then you've got science as well being presented as all being options here. And of course, Star Trek sets these things up so you can debate them and figure out where you come down on the issue. What did you guys think about these things that were set up here, talking about issues of death?
If I die and I see a bright light and it looks like the temporal anomaly in the Devron system, I will know that the universe is very well designed. I live my life proper, and I can die a happy man. I like that you brought in that they made it a sci-fi element, because there's an episode of Futurama where they say that there's this being who's stealing people's souls. Mm-hmm. And Fry and Leela are like, I don't want my soul stolen. He's like, no, it's your life force. He's like, isn't that just the same thing? He's like, no, this is science, damn it. Your life force, not your soul. And it kind of had that element here where we all know the question that they're asking. We all know what the representations are. And they kind of tried to hit it home at the end. When they ask the question, hey, maybe this is what all, you know, near-death experiences are like, and Jane was like, oh, God, I hope not. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot of ideas going on, and none of them really hit home, but we get what Jerry's trying to say, and it is much more of a hodgepodge than it was one singular idea, but I enjoyed it.
I think you could have made the whole episode around these questions. They are certainly big enough to where you could write a whole episode around it, and like you said, Tristan, they just gloss over it at the very end between Janeway and Chakotay. They don't even really get that into depth with the ideas themselves. They just talk about them superficially.
Yeah.
And that's about the extent that they go, which, I don't know. I think, honestly, if we want to get to the rewrite, I would have taken one of these and explored it further and made it one solid episode instead of the hodgepodge. Pick something and focus.
Well, now, Char, we know why you left your chair for a while Tristan was talking and while I was talking for so long. You went off to work on your rewrite ideas, because you told
that's
me it
right.
takes a lot
I
of time.
I have the whiteboard right next to me in the office here, and I was busy cranking away. Yes.
Yeah. What about you, Suzanne? Any thoughts on this?
Definitely just pick one idea and go with that instead of throwing everything into the crock pot and see what is going to mesh together or meld, because it really didn't. It was too jumbled. Mm-hmm. It's like, is he a space spider, or is it really the devil? What is it? Just let me know.
Yeah. I think on Voyager, they handled things like this better with, believe it or not, a hairy episode like Emanations, where you're really focused on one specific belief about the afterlife through the whole episode, and you can follow the mindset of the people and you can see it from a scientific side, being our crew's view of, of it, and then you can see it from a spiritual side being the alien's view of it.
So you think that they kind of did this similar idea, but better with emanations? Because I completely disagree.
Because it was focused, though.
No. That one was all over the place, too. They tried to do so many things with that one and had too much going on, and instead of going into detail once again, they just kind of superficially slack off and do it.
I'll have to go back and rewatch it. At least it leaves me with the memory of a more focused memory of the story.
I remember when I wrote the episode guide for that episode a long time ago, that I just thought, okay, this thing asks some profound questions, but it is all over the place.
Yeah. Also, Tapestry, of course, on The Next Generation handled something like this a whole lot better, because Q is a much better vehicle for that than Space Daddy Admiral.
Space Daddy.
Name of the episode.
Yeah. Does it bother anybody else when a grown woman says daddy?
It creeped me out.
Me too. Hey. Thank you.
Hey, it's an intimate name, and it's a sign of respect, and I think Chris would be able to understand this more because of where he was raised.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I think that if you actually have a daughter, like I do, you can picture, if you just move everything, 40 years into the future, 30 years into the future, I can see that, and it would seem normal, because it's at least between a parent and a child, it is just a connection of an emotional connection.
I
it may seem weird
from
the outside.
A few years back, and if I saw him, I don't believe I would ever call him daddy.
Yeah, sorry, I couldn't either.
I think, did you call him daddy when you were little, or did you call him something else?
I called him daddy when I was little.
Okay. I don't know. I think it doesn't bother me too much.
No, I know several people who have broken down in emotional circumstances, and that has popped out.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Especially in an emotional circumstance. I mean, you're not necessarily going to call him that all the time, but in the right situation, I could see that. One thing we didn't talk about that we said we were going to talk about in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Was, why in the hell are Janeway and Chakotay going together in a shuttlecraft on this mission? I mean, doesn't this violate every Starfleet protocol that you send the captain and the first officer alone to a stormy planet? Especially on a ship that's alone in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we all know that the president and the vice president, they travel together in a plane everywhere they go. So,
And if there's a threat to national security, they take the president and the vice president and they lock them both in a room together somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this makes zero sense.
Read the Constitution.
You should have known something was going to go wrong since Chakotay was piloting the shuttle.
Well, of course.
There's your tip off. This is going to end badly.
Yeah, and Janeway should have known better as a result, just right off the bat, that this was a bad idea. But, yeah, seriously, why just these two? I understand it's to set up the whole thing, but you need to do a little better than that.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that we didn't touch on here that you guys want to bring up in final thoughts on the episode and to give our rating? How about Tristan?
I never really connected with this episode hard. It's if I'm doing a hardcore rewatch, I'll watch it. But if I'm skipping around, it's probably not one that I'll go to. But there are a lot of elements that I enjoy and that I think that were very well done. And I for one am not always for jumping around and trying to hit multiple ideas, because it can be very disjointed, but for this one, it didn't necessarily bother me.
And what's your rating for the episode?
I'd say 3.5 chest pumps out of 5 in cardiopulmonary resuscitation.
Breathe, damn it, breathe!
I have a feeling that Suzanne's rating is going to be similar, but instead of chest pumps, it will be lip locks from the same scene.
I'd have to touch on the line that launched 1,000 fanfics. I just cheated death, Chakotay. How about a moonlight sail, champagne?
Oh, yeah, we need to talk about that. They sailed at midnight on a lake, just the two of them.
Yeah, because
that's totally Plutonic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is
because Riker
totally...
and Picard did that all the
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, Kira and Sisko, they did that all the time, too. Kirk and Spock, yeah, maybe.
Well, that was
yeah,
the coda.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That was the coda to Tapestry, Tristan.
It's just what you do when
That's
you cheat death,
learned.
Right? Yeah, no. Which, that's what kind of tips me off thinking that Janeway's, at this point, a little bit into the idea of maybe this is going to happen. I actually remember, okay, when this episode did air, I thought, okay, this is it. They really are going to move forward with this thing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you thought so?
I was really? Fool.
Yeah, I was squealing. I was so excited. I'm like, yes, yes, it's happening. The next week, I'm like, what the hell? What's going
on? Yes. Thank you. Because right after it, this is the Borg collective thing. What is that episode? Unity.
Unity.
Boo.
Yeah, Riley Frazier. Evil woman.
Vile. Chakotay kissing. He likes blondes. It's stupid. Okay, I'm done now. I've said my piece.
Oh. Now I'm picturing what I didn't mention when we were talking about it, but Tristan, you said maybe... this has more to do with Baywatch in Char's mind than in reality. Char wants to see Harry, Tom, the Delaney sisters, and Neelix running down the corridor in swimsuits and bikinis.
No, that's the holodeck resort program, also prevalent in season 3. See, it is Baywatch in space. Ha! Huh.
Neelix in a bathing suit. Yeah. No.
So, Suzanne, any more final thoughts on this? And what's your reading?
No. My rating would be 3 moonlight sails out of 5.
Nice.
Excellent.
With a bottle of champagne, right?
Plenty of champagne.
Nice.
All right, Char, what are your final thoughts?
Okay. Well, if you couldn't have already guessed, the relationshipper in me loves this episode. I watch it purely for that reason alone. Honestly, though, thinking critically about it, this thing is a hot mess, in the words of Lori. It's got so much going on. It does ask some great questions, does not explore them in any depth, like we said. And then there's just some things, like the way this story moves, its pacing is really just not on. I feel like they do some weird things too, where they set up the homing signal and, oh no, we better disconnect the homing signal. And then Chakotay and Janeway, when they get back to the ship, they just got examined by the doctor. And then Janeway says, oh, well, I'll have the doctor examine me. Maybe I'm going out of my mind. You just came from sick bay. So the pacing is really strange. And there's just some stuff in here that does not work for me at all. And really, in the grand scheme of things, this is a very forgettable episode. Nothing really of value carries over here. So, I'm going to have to give it 2 crash shuttlecrafts.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm with you guys. I appreciate what Jeri Taylor was trying to set up here. I like the questions that she's asking, but I think that... the fact that she had these ideas and couldn't get them to work on their own should have been a signal that some further development needed to be done on the actual ideas themselves before trying to put them into an episode. And throwing them all into one episode did not help with the exploration of any of them, really.
No.
And yeah. the episode, it's, you know, it works okay for me as a Star Trek episode to watch once, but it's not one that I'm going to go back to and watch over and over and gain something profound out of it and really explore it, because there's just too much of a mishmash going on there for me. And I actually feel that the editing is sort of sloppy as well.
Agreed.
And the effects are sort of sloppy. It's one of those episodes where I feel like they are kind of going through the motions of production, because at this point in Star Trek, they had done so many episodes that, you know, they have it down to like a step. This is how we make a Star Trek episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. And that's actually good to have that in production. But sometimes it shows, and this is a case where I felt like it actually showed, that there were just too many tropes in here and too much borrowed. And it didn't quite work for me. So I'm going to give this episode 4 bolts of ion lightning. Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys checked out the show outline here today. Uncredited co-stars in this episode. Who's playing the ion lightning? It's Jeffrey Combs, of course.
He is everywhere.
Well, of course. Who else? Yes.
I didn't even recognize him.
He's that good.
You never do.
Yeah, no one else could pull that off.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Tristan and Suzanne. And before we let you go, tell everyone where they can find you around the network and around the interwebs. So, Tristan, where can everyone find you?
Well, you can find me on To The Journey with my wonderful co-host, Charlene Schmidt. And you can also find me on Twitter at The Insane Robin.
Excellent. And people can also hear you as the voice of Previously on Trek FM.
That's right.
All right. And Suzanne, how about you?
You can find me on the Twitter at Suzanne Abbott.
And I believe you must have some Janeway Chakotay fanfic out there somewhere, don't you?
Not online anymore.
Anymore?
Just on my external hard drive.
So
yes,
it was there at one time.
Was there many, many moons ago.
Nice.
All right.
We'll have to talk about this.
Maybe that'll resurface. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us today, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Chris, I had a fantastic time talking with Tristan, my wonderful co-host on To The Journey.
To The Journey.
As well as...
So I didn't get to do that during Tristan's little closing bit there. He didn't give me an opening.
No, he didn't. He didn't. I suppose we can't wear it out. We can't do it every time.
Sure, I think we've worn it out at least a year ago.
We probably did, but oh well. It's a part of it now.
It's a reflex, though, is the problem. We're not trying to do it. It just comes out.
Well, it's sort of like a Bosom Buddies reference. It occurs to you. It happens.
It happens, yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's fine. And then also, our first-timer Suzanne did a fantastic job, and it was great talking with her, too. And it's nice to have another Janeway Chakotay relationshipper into the mix. I am no longer alone.
It is. But we're going to have to get some of that fanfic that she wrote in the past back online.
Absolutely. I am dying to read it.
Me too. All right. Well, CODA was great, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Star Trek 2009 5th Anniversary.
So I wrote a whole big thing about all that stuff. Where's Gary Mitchell? Why are there Romulans? This doesn't make any sense. And why is Tyler Perry in this movie?
Earl Grey.
Ferengi.
Can I have a root beer, please?
They're all examples of Ferengi. Dad! Not being Ferengis, so...
Sorry, that was a terrible, terrible knock. Earl Grey, now with 90% more Ferengi impersonations.
The Orb.
Great O'Brien episodes.
You know, obviously, too, I love the fact that Miles is not afraid to kind of bend the rules and do what he thinks is right.
The Ready Room.
The sound of her voice.
It's a masterful portrayal of the working class hero kind of thing that O'Brien is without making me feel, you know, guilty and without coming across as too heavy-handed.
To The Journey!
Darkling Rewrite.
It's that awkward moment when you accidentally call your teacher mom in class.
I hate to tell you, but I don't know if I ever did that.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Sorry, dude.
Warp 5.
Flocks.
And you see that, I think, in the way that he cares for his patients and he takes care of them with what we would consider very strange remedies. And yet, he's taking care of the whole person, and I really, really like that.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The Mount Rushmore of Trek.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, like, Chris, every time that you make a joke about Robin Leffler, I myself think, yes, he's right. Oh, wait, he's making a joke. Oh, that's too bad, because he's right.
Continuing mission.
Star Trek Horizon.
The main reason I wanted to do the movie was to close out storylines the Enterprise didn't get a chance to. I felt like it was kind of my contribution to the show that meant a lot to me.
Literary Treks.
Mission Gamma Twilight.
I don't think that Bashir knows how to be in a mature relationship. When Ezri starts exerting her own identity more, he doesn't know how to deal with that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We have shows on just about every topic you can think of related to Star Trek, and you'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. We're now on Spreaker as well, and also on BlackBerry. You can find us on Libsyn, on Blueberry. You can stream from our website or grab the RSS feeds as well. Drop them into your favorite app or listening method. And if you're over in the iTunes store, be sure to visit our new home where you can find all of our shows. And we have special topic groups there as well now, and have everything broken down for you in different sections. It's a great way to find old content that you may not have heard before, because believe it or not, we're quickly approaching 1,000 podcast episodes here on Trek FM. So there's a wealth of interviews and discussion waiting for you there. So go check that out. And huge thanks to Apple for giving us that great new section as well. You can get there easily by just going to itunes.com/Trek FM. And while you're over there, if you enjoy the show, please take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review as well. We love to hear from you, and it does help other Star Trek fans find the Ready Room as they're looking for Star Trek discussion there in the store. Now, if you'd like to send us feedback on today's show, let us know what you think about CODA. Let us know where you think Destination Star Trek should go next, or what would have happened if Star Trek had premiered on a Friday night. We'd love to hear that as well, and you can send us that by going to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website. There's an item there in the sidebar that you will see, and you can click that and just use your webcam's microphone, and you can upload it to us right there from that page. If you want to take part in a larger discussion, you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums and talk to us and other listeners about the show and anything about Star Trek. And if social media is your thing, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm, where we're tweeting away about Star Trek all the time. Now, Char, when you're not trying to devise new traps to capture Tristan and bring him here onto the Ready Room, where can people find you?
You can usually find me jabbering away on the Twitter, and my handle is Oh the Profanity. Warning, contains profanity.
That's right. Say it with attitude.
Yeah. Oh the Profanity! There you go.
Excellent. And we already mentioned that people can find both you and Tristan together every week, every Thursday, in fact, on To the Journey, where you guys talk about the minutiae of Voyager.
That's right. We talk anything, everything Voyager. So if you liked this discussion, give us a little bit of a listen if you haven't done so already.
We should also mention, Char, for Voyager fans listening to this, we have an episode of our fan film show, Continuing Mission, that you and I did together recently. I think it's episode 4. It's called A Souped Up Icheb, and you and I were joined by Manu Interame, who played Icheb on Voyager, and he shared a lot of really interesting behind-the-scenes things that happened on the set of Voyager that I had never read before or heard anywhere, and some good ones with Robert Beltran as well, so that might be of interest
to people. Some great, great stories there. So if you haven't listened to that, definitely give that a listen. We had a great time with that interview, and I feel like it's a fun listen for fans, too, just because it's not the same queued-up stories that you read in every interview and every convention. This is truly different stuff. It was a lot of fun.
It was fun, yeah. And as I mentioned, that's our fan film show, and the other topic that we talk with Manu about on there is reprising the role of Icheb in Star Trek Renegades. So
now you also did an interview with Tim Russ recently about Star Trek Renegades.
That's right. We didn't talk much about Tuvok on Voyager, but we did talk about Tuvok on Renegades and how that project came about, because Tim's actually directing. I should say he has directed. They're actually in post now, and I believe they just locked the film actually this past week. So
You can hear Tim
talk about that on Continuing Mission as well. Well, if you'd like to find me, besides on Continuing Mission, if you want to chat with me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then in addition to Continuing Mission, you can find me here on the network on Literary Treks with Matthew Rushing, which is about Star Trek books and comics, and we interview authors. You can also find Matthew and me on The Orb, which is about Deep Space Nine. Warp 5, I do that show with guests every week, and that's about Enterprise. And then there's also Matter Stream, which is about science and social issues, things inspired by Star Trek, all interviews over there as well, usually with scientists or actors or writers or other creatives, and some interesting stuff there. Actually, John Tenuto is on the latest episode of that, I believe it is, and we talked about newspaper, how the media covered Star Trek, the revival of Star Trek in the 1970s. So things he and Maria Jose found out going through in the archives.
That episode is that's fantastic. You know that I have a little bit of a background in newspapers, so that's I'm going to be fascinated by this one. I can't wait.
Yeah, it was a good show. John is always full of interesting information.
He is.
Well, before we let you go, we'd like to remind you one more time about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. Go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Choose Star Trek Memories or any book you want and get that absolutely free. If at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose. You get to keep that book, but I know you're going to love Audible. And by trying Audible, you'll be helping us keep the Ready Room coming to you every week. So again, go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and give it a try. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. Well, Char, I'm going to wander off. I'm going to actually go on that romantic midnight boat ride with Chakotay and Janeway. It's not me, actually. I've been possessed by the monkey. But, you know, I got to get on that boat somehow. So I hope they don't mind.
I'm sure they don't really care. I mean, they're not going to be paying any attention to you. So you can peek in and see how things are going. No problem. Yeah, that sounds good. I think it's time to stick a dying swan in it, because this ready room is done.